Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the second terrorist attack in Europe, where a big rig truck was used as a weapon of mass destruction, this time plowing into shoppers at a Christmas market in Berlin. Thomas Berger, Professor of International Relations at Boston University, who specializes in German politics, joins us to discuss how already the leader of the far-right Alternative for Germany party has labeled the victims of an attack that the Islamic State is taking credit for, Merkel's dead, indicating how explosive a political issue it will be if the perpetrator turns out to be a refugee from the Middle East. We will also examine how right-wing parties across Europe are stoking anti-immigrant xenophobia, which plays into the hands of the Islamic State, who want to drive a wedge between refugees and Muslims in Europe and the populations of the host countries. Then we'll look into why Trump's new national security advisor, General Michael Flynn, met recently with the head of Austria's anti-immigrant Freedom Party, which was founded by former Nazis. Daniel Serwer, professor and director of the Conflict Management Program and senior fellow at the Center for Transatlantic Relations at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, joins us to discuss the capture of U.S. national security and strategy by conspiracy theorists, ethnic nationalists, and anti-Semites, who are the top close advisors of a president-elect who is an anti-immigration bigot who ran on a platform of ethnic cleansing of Mexicans and Muslim immigrants. Then finally, we'll examine the announcement today in Moscow by the foreign ministers of Russia, Turkey, and Iran that they are ready to act as guarantors in a peace deal between the Syrian government and the opposition. Ori Barkey, the director of the Middle East program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, joins us to discuss the growing anti-American and pro-Russian rhetoric coming from Erdogan's government that prompted Secretary of State Kerry to raise concerns about allegations of American involvement in the assassination of the Russian ambassador, which Erdogan blames on Fethullah Gulen, the exiled cleric living in the United States. And joining us now is Thomas Berger, who's a professor of international relations at Boston University, who specializes in German politics, international relations, comparative government, and political culture. He's the author of War, Guilt, and World Politics After World War II and Cultures of Anti-Militarism, National Security in Germany and Japan. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Berger.
Good to talk to you, as always.
And it does seem that the atrocity that took place in Berlin yesterday is going to create quite a political crisis. The million almost so refugees that Germany took in, that sort of Angela Merkel took a very strong and moral stand on against a lot of criticism. And if it becomes clear that if they find this person that perpetrated this, and they had to let go the guy that they arrested, this Pakistani fellow, if it turns out that this person is a refugee seeking asylum, won't that be a nightmare for Angela Merkel and her party? She's already in trouble, isn't she?
Absolutely. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. Angela Merkel took a very strong, principled stance on the refugee issue last summer. And it was one which was controversial, but also one which won her considerable applause, both domestically and abroad. Problems with integrating and dealing with the refugees has been increasingly clear. And one should also understand that this is against the backdrop of Germany, which has been becoming increasingly globalized and internationalized. Germany used to see itself as being Germany, the country of Germans, a country defined by a community of descent, of ethnic and of ethnic ties of one people. And over the last two decades or so, Germany has been coming to terms with the fact that it's no longer that society. It's a country of a very diverse and increasingly diverse populations, with people from all sorts of backgrounds, from Eastern Europe, from Africa, from the Arab world, and elsewhere. And this has been raising very strong questions about how is it possible to integrate all these different kinds of people, and what are the implications, economic, social, and political, of trying to integrate all these different kinds of people into German society. And Merkel and others, sort of the mainstream German political leadership, have been sort of embracing that task, you know, going about trying to do so. But we also have voices in Germany, and those voices have been getting stronger, especially against the backdrop of this Syrian refugee crisis that began in earnest last summer. In 2015, that is, I should be clear, that say that, you know, Germany has to get reestablish control over its borders, that looking to Europe to work together with other countries in the European region to deal with this issue is not enough, and that Germany, frankly, is really again a country for Germans. And this is the sort of political expression of this is the so-called Alternative for Germany, or Alternative für Deutschland, AfD in German, which has been coming on strong over the last year and a half or so, and which has recently won some important state elections, or it's come in very strongly in some important state elections in Germany. And this, if this in fact turns out to be a refugee or a foreigner, who are resident foreigners, even if they have German citizenship, living in Germany, that is going to make those kinds of voices all the much stronger. And Merkel, who is probably the most successful and popular German politician in the last generation, is going to take another hit, and she's going to be forced, I think, to move further to the right on refugee issues, on immigration issues, and probably on other issues as well.
Well, but you mentioned the AfG, the Alternative for Germany. The leader of its party, Markus Pretzel, he has already said that of the 12 people that were killed in the Berlin market, along with the 49 injured, he has labeled them Merkel's dead.
That's right.
Said that Germany is no longer safe. So he's being shamelessly jumping aboard the bandwagon there in terms of stirring up this xenophobia.
No, there's no doubt about it. That I mean, and the instrument that he used to send out that message, by the way, happened to be a tweet. A tool that we've gotten quite familiar with here in politics in the United States. No, I mean, there's no doubt that for the AfD, this is a big opportunity to drive their message home, to push the argument that the German elites are out of touch with reality, and that German people need to turn to other political leadership in order to get control of the situation. The other force, though, which is also almost as quite important, are people inside of Merkel's own party. Merkel has been, shall we say, centrist, or even left of center within the constellation of the German Democratic, the Christian Democratic Union, her sort of party. But conservative critics inside her own party have been pushing on this issue, partly because they're afraid of the AfD, that is, conservative Germans in particular. I think the sister party of the CDU, the two parties always work together, the CSU, the Christian Socialist Union, which is dominates Bavarian politics in southern Germany, has been very, very critical of Merkel's whole position on immigration. And its leader, a gentleman by the name of Horst Seehofer, also almost immediately after saying that even though he's part of Merkel's government and he's part of the German Conservative Party to which Merkel belongs to, Seehofer almost immediately said that after we have, you know, mourned our losses, we need to rethink our immigration policies. So and Merkel is facing some challenge, some pressure from other political leaders as well, including her finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, a very capable, very much respected political figure in Germany. They're going to push her as well from inside her own party with the argument that unless we get a handle on this issue, we're not going to be able to reassure the German people that they are in fact safe. And then they voters, conservative end of the voting population in Germany will go over to extremists like the AfD. And also what's very important to understand is that the AfD is not only anti-immigrant, they're also anti-Europe. There's this anti-European Union. And they would, in fact, like to go out of the Eurozone, bring back the Deutschmark, and really reverse what has been over two decades or more of German foreign policy. So there are some very, very large stakes.
But again, just as there are ties here between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump that are murky and have yet to be fully fleshed out, the White House, of course, is doing an inquiry into the extent to which Putin tipped the scales in this election to help Trump and hurt Hillary Clinton, who apparently he hates. Putin also, I don't know how much he hates Merkel, but he's, I think he's afraid of Merkel because she speaks his language, he speaks her language. She's got his number pretty clearly, and she's been one of the few people that's tried to talk sense into him in long, long phone conversations. Apparently now she's pretty much given up. Just to show you the kind of nature of Putin, his hatred of, well, I don't know what it's, whether it's hatred, but whenever when he last met with Merkel in Moscow, he learned, being a KGB man, that she had a childhood trauma from being bitten by a dog. So what does Putin do? He brings in his big, huge black dog, and there's pictures of her sitting there in this grand kind of Kremlin drawing room, just, you know, cringing in fear as this big sort of dog looks at her, you know. So we know already that Putin has unleashed the same hackers that he unleashed on the American election or against the Democrats on Germany with these troll farms. And the reason we know it is that the head of German intelligence has told us such.
Right. No, I mean, the whole issue of German relations with Russia is also very interesting. I mean, and you've already gotten a lot of the details here, you know, very nicely explained. I mean, Putin, in many ways, made his early stage career in Germany. He was stationed in Berlin. He speaks apparently fluent German. Merkel grew up in East Germany, and she grew up speaking Russian. So the two of them, I don't know what language they actually use when they meet with each other, perhaps English, but they have a great understanding of each other's language, the culture, and the background out of which they come from. Merkel, that story you told about the dog is a very revealing one. I recall that story, but she also understood that Putin was playing mind games with her, and she didn't allow herself to be intimidated by him. So she's quite strong psychologically, and she, at the same time, whatever personal chemistry, negative in this case, may exist between the two of them, these are two countries that have to come to terms with each other. They are, after all, very large, very powerful countries. They do a lot of trade with each other. And while they no longer have common borders, thank goodness, they have a lot of their spheres of influence overlap in Central and Eastern Europe. So Merkel has to work with Putin and try to stabilize the situation, relations with Russia. And Russia, for its part, is very heavily dependent. I mean, the Russian economy is overwhelmingly dependent upon energy exports and natural exports, needs foreign technology to help modernize its economy. And Germany is one of the major investors in Russia and one of the major partners for modernizing the Russian economy. So Putin, in the long run, also understands that he needs Germany as well. So they're doing a very delicate dance. Now, at the same time, Putin wants to undermine Merkel, and we know that he has been supporting far right-wing populist parties throughout throughout Western Europe, including Marine Le Pen and the Front National in France, and also he seems to be supporting both simultaneously the far right and the far left, the Linke Partei, the left party in Germany, many of them in the eastern part of Germany are ex-communists, and the Alternative for Germany party that you mentioned. And he also seems to be supporting the Pegida, the this is a sort of right-wing anti-immigrant demonstration group, which is pan-European movement against the Islamization of the West, is sort of the direct translation of this. So what we saw to some extent taking place in the United States is taking place in Europe as well, and Putin has some ready allies inside of the German political system. And going back to what we said earlier, one of the focuses of their propaganda is that Islam is a threat to the West, the immigrants are spreading violence and terrorism in Western countries. And in fact, the West should join with Russia in a kind of global battle I dare not use the word crusade, to deal with radical Islam. So this is, again, fits into that narrative, and there's that dimension to the story as well.
Well, you have to add to that list, though, of countries that and parties that Putin has funded and encouraged. If you've got Orban even further to the right than him in Jobbik, it's called, in Hungary. And then you've got in Austria Putin's ties to the anti-immigrant Freedom Party, which is founded after World War II by former Nazis. And by the way, General Flynn, the new national security advisor, met a few weeks ago with the head of the Austrian neo-Nazi Freedom Party. So, but my understanding is that the biggest sellout in terms of the politics of Germany vis-a-vis Russia is Gerhard Schröder, the Social Democrat leader, who has basically been bought off by Putin. Am I being too unkind?
Well, Schröder certainly did not cover himself with glory after he stepped down. Gerhard Schröder, who was the German chancellor in the early 2000s and late 1990s, interestingly enough, he was one of the supporters of the U.S.-led NATO mission in Kosovo in 1999, a mission that was very much opposed by Putin and by Russia at the time. But after he stepped down from office, he joined a large corporation working with Russia to develop a new gas pipeline running from Russia through the North Sea, bypassing Poland. And he has been paid very well. I don't remember the details about that. And yes, I mean, Putin tries to use every instrument that's available to him to exercise and gain influence in the West. And unfortunately, there are people who are willing to cooperate with him. It is difficult, however, while you can buy off individuals and while you can influence politics from the margins, and sometimes that can have a decisive impact, but it is difficult to try to buy an entire political establishment. And so Germany is not for sale, fortunately. Some other countries may be more susceptible to Russian influence, especially to the eastern parts of Europe, because they are poorer countries, and Russia has deeper and perhaps in some ways more complex ties with those societies.
Right, but the part of this that's just so extraordinary is that we're talking about essentially what happened yesterday. Obviously, we've broadened the conversation out a bit, but a truck plowed into Christmas shoppers at the Berlin market right there in this historic spot in Germany in front of the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church, which is, whose spire is still bomb damaged from World War II. They've deliberately left it there as a reminder of how much of Berlin that was destroyed at the end of the war. And the idea that 12 people were just run over and 48 or 49 were injured, some of them very seriously. They captured a Pakistani guy that some bystander had chased down. Turns out that he's probably not the suspect, and the suspects got away. He killed, shot and stabbed a Polish truck driver who apparently owned the truck, or his brother owns the truck. And the truck was hijacked. This guy's got away. We don't know when and if they'll catch him. But that's the situation we're in now. But as you pointed out, it's created a tremendous political crisis, and a growing one for Angela Merkel. But what people don't remember is that the outflow of refugees from the Middle East that ended up in about a million coming into Germany, as we recall, seeing all those very dramatic pictures last year, that outflow happened after Russia intervened in Syria militarily. And it's possible now that with the fall of Aleppo that there could be another huge number of Sunnis escaping the Shiite majority of this murderous leader of a country that he has destroyed, Assad. So you could have, Putin holds the levers, you know, he can, as the former head of NATO said, he can weaponize refugees.
Well, he can try to do that, and to some extent that has already happened. I should emphasize, though, that, I mean, a little bit over a third of the refugees are actually from Syria. The refugees which are arriving in Europe, not only in Germany, though Germany has taken in by far the largest number in absolute terms, are coming from all across the greater Middle East. I mean, they're coming from Algeria, they're coming from Morocco, they're coming from Libya, which we managed to destabilize. They're coming, of course, from Syria. They're also coming further afield from Afghanistan. And so really what we're seeing here is the result of a number of trends coming together, but this sort of enormous arc of crisis stretching from North Africa to Afghanistan and Pakistan, which is generating this huge number of people who are moving towards safety, prosperity, and the dream of a better future. And so part of that is attributable to Russian activities, but I think the Russians can be said to have exacerbated an already bad situation. Also, ironically, and I certainly do not approve of Russian policy in Syria, but ironically, what we may see is we may see a restabilization of Syria. It's the sort of stability of a concentration camp that will result if we have a victory of the Assad regime. But that's quite possible. And if so, then some of those refugee pressures, those pressures which are pushing refugees out from Syria, will decline. The other thing which one also has to understand is that the Europeans have changed their policy considerably since 2015. There has been, in general, a toughening of the borders. There has been a toughening of the rules dealing with refugees. While Europe is continuing to take in refugees who face a well-grounded fear for persecution, we're trying not to send people back into situations where they're going to be killed. But nonetheless, there are people being sent back, for example, to Afghanistan, who are facing real dangers there. And also terribly important, and this is another part of the story if you want to further broaden the conversation, I mean, central to the entire European strategy for dealing with refugees has been working with neighboring countries, countries near the heart of the crisis, around Syria in particular, and above all, working with Turkey in order to make them the front line of defense, the bastions which are preventing even larger numbers of people making their way to Europe. As you may recall, last year, Merkel led the negotiations with the Turkish President Erdogan, offering him aid, important diplomatic concessions, and also increased visa freedom to visit Western Europe, in return for Turkey promising to disrupt the networks, human trafficking networks, which were helping bring refugees into Europe, and for housing and taking care of refugees in Turkey, as opposed to letting them move on to Europe. So there are a number of factors which are now in place, institutions, arrangements, which will help the Europeans get a handle, not solve, but get a handle on the refugee crisis, as long as that agreement, by the way, with Erdogan holds. That's a critical caveat and something we have to watch moving forward.
Sure, and because Erdogan's foreign minister and the Russian foreign minister and defense minister, along with the Iranian foreign minister, made an announcement today in Moscow that they've come to an agreement to end the civil war in Syria. Not that they can end it, but they've certainly come to an agreement about supporting Assad. So I thank you, Thomas Berger, for joining us here today.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, Ian, as always.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Thomas Berger, who's a professor of international relations at Boston University. He specializes in German politics, international relations and comparative government, and political culture. He's the author of War Guilt and World Politics After World War II and Cultures of Anti-Militarism, National Security in Germany and Japan. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into why Trump's new national security advisor met recently with the head of Austria's anti-immigration Freedom Party, which was founded by former Nazis.